my opinion, if you want to learn more about marketing, about how to do it well, study and read copywriters.
Welcome to the Marketing Development Podcast. It's back. Yes, we're back on the airwaves in your favorite podcast player. Lee, that was just for you. Today, we have the fabulous Toddy Jones from CopyFlight talking to us about copy, about business, and actually about being an entrepreneur. Todd runs CopyFlight, as I say, but also the Uncommoners WordPress group for uncommon entrepreneurs. And we talk about starting your journey, the importance of copy, and how SEO and copywriting has changed over the past few years. Show notes can be found at peteeverett.com/017. Welcome to this episode of the Marketing Development Podcast. I'm Pete, and today I am joined by the one and the only Todd E. Jones. How are you doing, Todd?
Chuckling a little bit after hearing the one, the only. Yeah, there's only one of me, I guess.
You should have blasted in with your Chesney Hawks. I am the one and only. Hang on, that's the first time I've sung on this podcast. I've just...
That's cool.
It's an exclusive.
Now that I know that, I might break out into song.
Well, we can try. Todd and I have, well, we've had a few chats before, haven't we, Todd? But we sort of met virtually through Lee Jackson, through Kim Doyle, through your group, the Uncommoners, which we can talk about in a bit, and through the Marketing Development Podcast group, which you are, very much a part of.
Yeah. You know, the circles get smaller as you do more stuff, I guess, and so I feel fortunate and blessed that I have friends across the world, including my friends in the UK. And so, yeah.
Yeah, well, this is true. If you hadn't noticed from Todd's accent, he is... are you deep south? Not quite. Whereabouts in the US are you?
I'm in Arkansas. If you don't know where that is, if you know where Louisiana is, which is the state where New Orleans is, we're just north of Louisiana.
Okay, that's cool. So,
In fact, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but
it's all right.
You know, the great actor Burt Reynolds passed away yesterday, and one of his earliest films was called White Lightning, and it was recorded in the Little Rock, Saline County area, and so there's a little Arkansas in the. And plus, he also did a show called Evening Shade at one point, and that was about a football coach. And the setting, fictionally, was Evening Shade, and there's an Evening Shade, Arkansas, so kind of based it on that. It's a little bit of a trivia for you, I guess, with Burt Reynolds and his connection to Arkansas.
Well, there you go. It's obviously a place that needs to be put a bit more on the map.
Yeah, and it's the home state of President Bill Clinton, so we have the Clinton Library here in Little Rock, and so...
Cool, okay. Yep. Okay, I wasn't aware of that. So, Todd runs his own. Well, I was going to say agency, but it's a copywriting agency, I suppose, isn't it, Todd? Called CopyFlight.
Correct. Yeah, that's right.
So, do you want to give us a little bit of a lowdown about what that is and your, because you recently launched CopyFlight, didn't you, back earlier this year?
Yeah. So, you know, when I started doing freelancing, probably about 10 years ago, it was a website. Base and did WordPress websites and that kind of thing, and then I launched that full time in 2013, and I was kind of, you know, I was the WordPress website guy, that kind of thing. And then as I went, I realized the necessity for content marketing, kind of moving that direction as well, kind of adding that as part of my portfolio. And then I just decided somewhere along the way that it needs to just be content. And I still like putting together WordPress websites. I still get involved in that. But when I have heavy lifting, I usually get the vendor to do it for me. So, but anyway, and I come up with this idea for CopyFlight last year. And the vendor and Kim and a few others were like, hey, man, that's a really great brand. You should launch it. And I had Graphics Cat Media, which is hard to remember, hard to spell the way I spelled it. just didn't make sense. And as much as I like cats, I decided, yeah, I do need to go to CopyFlight. So I started that process earlier this year. DeVinter helped me on the website, and I actually went through the process of writing my own copy, which is not perfect, but it gives me a sense of how hard it is to write copy for yourself. Mm. So it's really very, and that's, you know, I had a project this summer from a WordPress developer, and she was like, you know, I just can't do this. I need your help. It's like, okay. And so writing copy for yourself and your client's going to try to do it. And, you know, it's just hard to do. You're so close to it. In fact, in the copywriter community, a lot of copywriters will get other copywriters to do their copy for them on their website, you know.
Yeah, so, I can believe that. And I know I'm very much a developer. Anything I write is always very dry, and it's factually based and factually fine, but it's not always that engaging. That's one of the reasons why I started a podcast, because I'm far better at talking than I am at writing. I know that from the agency side of things, when you're trying to do, even if it's just develop your own website, it's always the first job that gets pushed. It's the one that you're most critical about. And I guess it's the same thing when people are trying to write their own copy.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that sounds
and it doesn't, you know, it doesn't matter if you're a web developer, a marketing consultant, or a copywriter even. It's really difficult to write your own copy. You're just too close to it. Now, I realize some people, depending on the stage of business they are, they don't really have the funds, and I get that. So, you know, you kind of have to do the best you can. And I have, you know, begin developing some sources I think will help with that along the way. But it's really hard to do it for yourself. You're just too close to it, you know?
You know, that's a really interesting point, that, because you've obviously identified a key niche. I mean, if you look at the homepage, which is copyflight.com, it says right there on the top banner, it's the third line down, we help WordPress agencies create copy for their clients. So you know exactly who it is that you're talking to. But you've just highlighted there that some of the resources you're making are for people that can't afford your services yet. So that's really kind of a long play to set yourself up as an authority in the niche for when their copy needs updating, or they know of other people that need copy updating, they can recommend you on.
Yeah, that, and whenever they're doing a site for someone and they need copy. So yeah, set myself up to be a partnership with a number of agencies would be nice. The other side of it is I feel like my tribe is more the solopreneur, freelancer, mm-hmm. and small agency owners. And so, you know, I think some of this plays into that as well. While I may do more partnership with an agency of some kind, you know, you build those sources, I think eventually we can help maybe people who are, you know, more like solopreneurs, marketing consultants, that kind of thing. So I think there's going to be a kind of a dual thing there. But yeah, I'm kind of concentrating on the WordPress agencies right now.
That's cool. So do you just want to run us through a little bit how does it work? So I run an agency, so digital. We're based in the UK. I have a client. The client needs copy. Todd, you can help me out. How does it go from there?
Well, you know, it's going to depend on what you want to do as the agency. You know, mm-hmm. are you project managing the entire thing? Am I just coming in to help with that? Or do you need me to actually meet with the client and do the intake questionnaires and that kind of thing? Mm-hmm. I can do it either way. But, excuse me, there's going to be a number of information, pieces of information I'm going to need to build the copy for the site, whether it's the... So I have a, might call it a starter package on copy that I call Web Core. Let me see. It's been a while, so I look. Web Core messaging or something like that. Yeah, right. It's a core website copy. That's what I call it. And it includes the homepage, the about page, and your main product or service page. Mm-hmm. And because those are the three most important pages that your website has. So to do the backdrop or the background that I need to build a homepage will be the backdrop that you need or the background you need to do just about any page on the site, because you got to learn about the unique value proposition. You got to learn about the benefits that your company offers. You have to learn exactly who your target audience is, what that persona is, what their pain points are, so that you can address those. I do a homepage copy audit that I've been doing. I'm working on the fifth one now, and for this year, and it allows me to assess the homepage to see if they're hitting some of those things that I talk about. I have a little homepage copy template. I'll try to get all that for you for your show notes, because I don't have it quite organized like I need to have, but I'm working toward another freebie which will include everything. But you know, you're gonna need to know basic copy principles like unique value proposition, the benefits that come with the features, their persona. Those kind of things. You need to have those things in place to know the to write the home page. Once you have that in place, it's a really good foundation to write the other pages. But this core website copy package comes with the home page, the about page, and like I said, a main service or product page. The about page is an interesting thing because we tend to write our about pages all about us. And while there is some truth to that, you've got to find a way to still speak to your target audience. So that's a pretty interesting, you know, I see a lot of about pages are like we. Any copy on your website needs to not have too much we. Yeah. It needs to be what I call customer-centric copy. So the copy needs to center on the customer.
You know, when I wrote the about page for PeteEverett.com, it was I actually worked my way through a Chris Ducker has a video about writing about page copy, and I worked my way through the video and sort of paused it every 15-20 seconds and kind of moved on to the next bit, then moved on to the next bit. So it's probably not the greatest about page in the world, but I needed help to get on with it.
And that's the thing, and here's the thing, it's real easy to not move on because of perfection or I don't think I have it right, and at some point you just gotta do something, right?
Yeah.
Or you'll stay stuck. So an imperfect about page is a lot better than a no about page.
Absolutely.
I was talking to somebody recently and she said, I believe that websites are made to evolve, and I agree with that. I mean, our businesses evolve, right?
Yep.
I mean, we're not the same as we were 5 years ago. We do something totally different. And so our businesses evolve. I've also worked in the startup world a little bit. I did some writing for a local publication where I visited with startups. And I learned a lot about startups. And they will do pivoting based on what their customer feedback is.
Mm.
So essentially, and that's not unusual. You know, very few businesses start on day one and look the same several years later.
Yeah. I can certainly relate to that. And you know, that I think that's one of the things that is one of the biggest barriers for people when they're, you know, when they're sitting in their desk job thinking, oh, why am I doing this? I want to do this on my own. And they think that they need a finished business to walk into, you know, leave work on a Friday and walk into a finished business on a Monday morning. And that's just not the case at all. You know, what the original business idea I had was to do white label digital marketing services. I wasn't going to run an agency at all, particularly. I was a bit like you're working with other agencies. My plan was to work with other agencies. And it was through twists and turns and the people that I met and a former colleague and this, that, and the other, the stories that we were sharing that actually put this agency together. And, you know, I know you were part of Graphics Cat, and that was a little bit difficult for people to remember to spell. It wasn't necessarily positioned right. And then, you know, your company's evolved into content, and then CopyFlight's been born out of that.
Correct. Yeah. Business is an evolution and life is an evolution in general. And we're not the same. You know, there's some things about us that are the same as they were 15 years ago, but you know, you look at yourself now, you know, I'm working up on 30 years out of high school. And they started a Facebook group, and you know, I know a lot of the people in the group, and I'm thinking, you know, just now thinking about this, well, none of us look the same. I mean, we still look the same, but we don't look the same, you know.
Yeah.
We still got some of the same characteristics and traits that we did when we were 18 years old, but we look different and our lives are different, you know. It just happens that that's what happens, and you just got to find what works for you. But you're right about people in the desk job, you know, wanting to walk into, and I think some well-intended people will tell people, you know, make sure you have, in a perfect world, you'll have customers already, and you'll have money in the bank already, mm-hmm. and you'll have, you know, the ability to make income over the next 6 months when you start. In a perfect world, right? But it doesn't always work out that way. So I agree with you on that. I mean, I'm not saying, you know, dive into the deep ocean with nothing. But by golly, have some, you know, you have to realize there's going to be an evolution to it. And if you wait till everything's perfect, you'll never get started.
Yeah, no, too right. You know, so this is the second company I've run. The first company, it was basically a freelance WordPress developer. I was basically a freelance WordPress developer. That was what I did. And I left work on September the 28th. And my first day doing freelance stuff was October the 1st. And it would have been, what, 2011. October the 1st, 2011. And I had to open a business bank account, and in order to open the bank account, you had to put some money in. So my mum gave me 50 quid to pay into this bank account. Right, great. Bank account, 50 quid. On October the 3rd, I got a bill from Companies House, which is the registration body for companies in the UK. And I owed them 40 pounds. So fine, I can pay that. Paid out 40 quid. I don't want to be in debt to anybody. So I had £10 left in this bank account. And I'm thinking, if I don't seriously earn some cash between now and the end of the month, my wife is really going to think this is a bad idea. I'm going to be in a really bad place. And you know what? I had some contacts with some clients, and we sort of made some deals that if I can do this for you quite quickly, can you just turn the invoice around? You met the first month's salary or the first month's pay, and then the second month was easier, then the third month was easier again. And you know what? By the time I got to January, so month 4, I couldn't imagine doing anything else. We were into the swing of it. And it was just that initial getting going that was the my wife calls it brown trousers time. It was the you know, that was the nervous bit, but after that you were flying. That was it.
Yeah, and my situation probably not as stressful as yours was. So having a wife and having a family to depend on you, I would have probably been out of the business a long time ago if I'd been doing that. So, but yeah, I totally get what you're saying. About a year ago, I got an office. Now, it's not a very big office, not very expensive, but it was an opportunity for me to leave the house. And at the time, I needed to be out of the house. And so I got an office, which is kind of a risk for me, if you will. Mm. And I thought, well, I'm making enough money on this regular blog client I have to pay for that every month. And I said, I'll try it through the end of the year, see how it goes. And if it's not working out, I can discontinue it. And I'm still here. I'm doing this podcast from your office. I did every podcast that I've been on from this office, I believe. So
there you go.
And some Facebook Lives I did last month. So it's worked out okay.
Now I'm pleased you mentioned Facebook Live. So Todd, you also run a Facebook group, don't you, called Uncommoners? It was Uncommon Entrepreneurs, but you've changed it to Uncommoners.
Yeah, I was just trying to make it easier to remember Uncommoners, but it is about uncommon entrepreneurs. Again, those solopreneur, freelancer, small agency owners. But I think, you know, the thing is, I think Hollywood has stereotyped what an entrepreneur is, and not many people really fit that mold. So I grew up in a rural town in Arkansas. We had entrepreneurs all over town. It was the barber shop owner, It was a lady who cleaned houses, the mechanic down the street, the guy who had a farm on the eastern side of the county. You know, a lot of people in town had these businesses. They were small, but they raised their family with those businesses. Mm. That's an uncommon entrepreneur. It's not the big real estate mongol in Manhattan, you know, that got a loan from his parents, you know, to get started, you know. Or it's not, today's entrepreneur has been stereotyped as the Mark Zuckerberg type. And even if you look at Mark, he's an uncommon entrepreneur, really. I mean, you know, you're supposed to finish college. Well, he didn't. You know, the same is true of the, I can't think of his name, Bill Gates. It's worked out okay for Bill and Mark. But because those guys have come along and done what they have done, then there is a stereotypical entrepreneur that's kind of built in their likeness. You know, oh, it's the tech, you know, the Elon Musk type of guy. Mm. And truth is, none of us are really a common entrepreneur, right? We all start for different reasons. My email this morning is about the why, which has been asked to me before, and maybe I'm thinking about a little bit more, but everybody's why is different. Sometimes it's about survival. You know, I started, you know, maybe you started your business out of survival, and that's your why for a long time. Maybe your why is you want to leave something to your kids, you know, when you've moved on. Maybe your why is, you know, you want to make a difference somehow, and you started a company. So, but the uncommon entrepreneur, and I want to tell those stories. So we're building a little bit of community. I'm not, you know, trying to go as fast as some of the others. I let it grow organically. I'm not pushing it very much. But we have about 80 people in there, I guess. And so eventually, you know, some of those people in that community, their stories will be told because they have interesting stories. I'm a storyteller at heart. That's what I tell people. You know, I'm a storyteller. Of course, you know, I do it writing copy for companies, or I have a local, hyper-local site that I do, kind of a lifestyle blog. And there's a lot of storytelling there, telling the story of a business owner, or profiling a business, or an artist, something like that. And it's really beginning to catch some momentum, actually. And I put a post on Facebook on my profile last night. The momentum is a powerful thing. I don't know if you saw that, but a lot of people started liking it.
And, yeah, I saw that.
And that's really where it was coming from. That Conway Scene is the name. The little town I live in is called Conway. About 65,000 people. And so, you know, we hit 500 likes yesterday on Facebook. I do not even pay for those likes. I mean, in a year and a half, organically, we've gone to over 500 likes. And it's just been slow. I got some sticker mule stickers this week for a Conway Scene logo, and I began handing those out. And, you know, it's just very organic. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't make any money from it because I've not been taking any revenue in yet. And so I continue to do, you know, copy flight and all that to kind of generate my living revenue. And so I leave that as very organic. But the momentum has started to pick up this summer. And that's where I'm, you know, I didn't go back and look at the numbers, but I'm pretty sure that, you know, coming into summer, we're like 200 likes or something like that. Now we're over 500. So it's very organic. What I really want, though, is the email list to grow. That's, I'd like to have 500 likes, but I'd really like to have 500 on the email list. So
now I'm on your email list. So you send out, is it two emails a week? Or is it more than that?
From CopyFlat, one.
One, right, okay.
Yeah, and I follow some people who recommend and do the daily. I think there's a lot of benefit in that. It's not easy to do. I'm not sure I'm there yet, but if email copywriters, Ben Settle is one that advocates that. Mm. He's got good emails. You learn a lot about copywriting principles and marketing and business principles in general. Not everybody likes the guy. He's a little different. But he has good books too. So, you know, it's worth looking at some of his books. And then another guy I follow is Nabil Aziz, and he does the same thing. He's the daily emails, and he's from Dubai, and just a big bearded burly guy, kind of like me, and real nice guy, and he has some really good stuff there as well. And but what I have told people over and over, and you said a lot of people in your group and listening are marketing consultants. So I will tell you this. This is my opinion, but I think it bears itself out. I've learned more about copywriting from, I'm sorry, about marketing from copywriters than anywhere else. So in my opinion, if you want to learn more about marketing, about how to do it well, study and read copywriters. Read their blogs, go on their podcasts, read their books. I think this is an interesting thing, and I was thinking about this in preparation for this podcast. Because you were asking me, you know, why have copywriting? Well, I think back to Copy Blogger. I'm not sure when that launched. Sometime in the middle of last decade, Brian Clark, I think he saw where we are now. And I think he saw it back then because everything was getting digitalized. Everything was moving to online. It's still in the process, right? So he tapped into old school copywriting methods and began teaching people, basically teaching people who were going to do marketing online. That's all he did. He, you know, when I look back at some of the articles, I'm like, oh, well, he's, you know, quoting Gene Schwartz. He's quoting, you know, legendary copywriters and telling stories about copywriting from days when we didn't even have internet, you know? It's like sort of like Mad Men. Mad Men's kind of hyperbole in some ways, but you know, going back, and they had to write these letters that were sent out to this list, and they had to convince people to write a check on the spot and send it in. And he took the methods, you know, the principles, old school copywriting, and taught it to people who were making the transition to, because he knew that we were going to need that, you know. And then I think inbound marketing shows the differences between old school, what they call interruption marketing, and what Seth Godin calls permission-based marketing. And we're making that transition now as well. You know, 30 years ago when I was in high school, we were watching our episodes on TV, right? Well, last night I watched two episodes of a show on Netflix, only to realize I came to the end of the season one and they haven't put out season two yet. But I watched that within 2 hours, not one single commercial, you know. Yep. It's a different age now. And so some of those things that we did 30 years ago, we don't do anymore. And so everything has become more digital, you know, online. And I like the word digital marketing, I guess, as well as anything. But you have to adapt to that. So that means not only is the methods change as far as the delivery, but that means the mentality of the people who receive the delivery has changed. We were used to getting a phone call in the middle of the night, or, you know, maybe 7 o'clock at night. And guess what? We answered the phone. Yep. Now if you get a phone call, it's on your cell phone. If you don't recognize the number, you don't answer it. You know, I don't know. Maybe you do. And, you know, just things like that. So people's expectations have changed. They're not, you know, so I think it's kind of funny how the cycle has come back around where we need the old school marketing methods or old school, you know, copywriting to help us with the new school marketing methods. It's kind of interesting if you ask me. And I think Brian Clark and maybe a few others saw that coming, which is why he launched Copyblogger. I guess he's not even a part of that anymore. I think WP Engine bought the whole kit and caboodle, but
they have a habit of buying up different things, don't they? There's a few.
That's the maturity of the WordPress ecosystem right now.
Yeah,
you're seeing larger companies buy smaller companies that are doing good work, and you know, I think you're going to see more. I think we're going to see more software as a service companies, in different ways. Like, for instance, I write blog posts for Main WP, which is a basically a plugin that helps you create a dashboard that you can manage multiple sites. Well, there's a number of those out there, right? There's a couple that are self-hosted. They're one of them. They're probably the main one that's self-hosted. But that's basically a software as a service. Then they support other software as a service providers, if you will, because the people who use them, they're either taking care of their clients' websites. Yep. I hear everything from 80 to 100 to hundreds of sites, you know, in the portfolio. And then some have even gone and launched a service just to do maintenance, website care.
Yep.
is a better term. They're just doing, you know, Jeffrey Patch and Maintain Press. There's a lot of guys like that. There's a guy who's a main WP customer named Scott Barrel Roll, I think is what it's called. He's out of Virginia. But there's a lot of those guys that are and gals that are doing these kind of services. Essentially a software as a service provider. Not exactly like Dropbox or something. It's a little different, but you're providing a service. It's a productized service.
Yeah.
So it's interesting because you're seeing the WordPress ecosystem mature in that regard. Of course, we got a little uncertainty with Gutenberg coming and what's going to happen with that. I think it'll eventually all get worked out. But so it's moving in that direction a little bit. You're seeing more maturity. So WP Engine buys the whole Studio Press thing.
Yeah.
GoDaddy has bought a couple of they bought WP SiteCare, and I think they bought another company. And, you know, some of these larger companies are starting to do that. And it's going to be a more productized service, you know. And you talked about how in 2012 you started as a WordPress developer. I thought, my first thought was, that's really not a good model anymore, is it?
I mean, no, it's not.
I mean, you know, if you're going to do it, you know, you got to differentiate yourself. And that's why, you know, agencies become agencies. They're trying to offer something different. But you really do. You got to differentiate yourself somehow. And it's tough to even be just a freelance developer without connecting with a company like yours or Lee's or somebody like that and getting regular work if you want to do it that way. If you're going to do an agency, then you got to differentiate yourself somehow. A lot of people are going into the niche. John Locke is doing SEO for and manufacturers, industrial yep. industry out in California. Sarah Dunn has gone into SEO for the wedding industry. What a niche, right? And
yep.
And they're tearing it up. And I think you'll see more of that too. People like, you know, and Lee has kind of become the agency lead for other agency, you know, leaders. And, you know, and I follow Erin Flynn as well. And she's kind of like the leader of the website design, you know, niche, if you will. There's a bunch of us mm-hmm. in her group. And she has some really good stuff. And she's very communication oriented because that's her background. And so, you know, it's just, and we learn from everybody. But you see the maturing of the WordPress ecosystem. So we'll see. It'd be interesting to see where it goes.
It will indeed. It will indeed. And there's a bit of an overlap as well, because in the last sort of, I don't know, 12, 18 months in particular, there's been this rise of the personal brand. It's become far more an influential factor, something that people are actively talking about and actively doing. I had Kim on the podcast, I don't know, a couple of months ago now, and she was talking about the differentiating factor is yourself, which if you're talking freelancer, if you're talking personal brand, if that's how you want to be known, then she's dead right. If you're starting to talk agency level, though, I still think there's an element whereby the personal brand, what's the right way of putting this, it takes a sort of back seat when you start looking at companies over a certain size, when you're actually trying to do business to business type sales and communications.
Mm-hmm.
And I know if I had Chris Ducker on the podcast, he'd probably shoot me down and challenge me and this, that, and the other. I'm talking from my experience, but that's I think
I'm not saying that the personal brand won't overtake into that space, but I don't think it's there yet. The personal brand, and Kim's doing a great job. You know, she's a content marketer essentially at the end of the day. And you mentioned the daily newsletter. Kim tries for a daily newsletter and is very open when she doesn't make it happen. So she'll probably be howling with laughter when hearing us talk about her newsletter. But there you go.
No, yeah, she calls it almost daily, and she really has slowed down a lot on it lately for sure. I think that's interesting, what you're saying. I think you're probably right. It's harder to do business with a larger business with a personal brand. I mean, not saying you can. I guess Chris Brogan did it pretty well. Mm-hmm. But I see myself, part of me is being like Kim in the sense that like, I do feel like my tribe or people like yourself and other solopreneurs. And so I eventually feel like I'll take some of the stuff I'm doing for the WordPress agencies to more individuals down the road. And I may be doing more stuff that are similar, that is similar. I still like getting on Zoom and helping people work through things and the coaching aspect of it. And I hope to make that a part of what I'm doing. But you make a point, you know, brands tend to want to work with other brands. But there might be a exception to that rule. Maybe a company wants to work with Rand Fishin for SEO. Okay, well, you know, he's got a brand. I did realize, though, there's not one single branded Twitter account that I could do that will match my personal Twitter account. My Twitter account, I don't know, I forgot how many people are following me. I really don't know. But it's like over 4,000. Well, CopyFlat will never have 4,000 people following it. Conway Scene, and I haven't even got a Twitter account for Conway Scene, but they will never match that. So it's kind of interesting that I've built a little bit of a brand for myself, and I really don't want to do that, but it kind of works that way. So you kind of have to figure out how to balance both of them, and maybe at one point your brand becomes yourself. It's kind of what happened to Kim, right? And she's real comfortable where she is. She's comfortable working with a lot of the people that are in my tribe use her, because I hear them saying, "Well, had a coaching session with Kim, and that's fantastic." You know, they're learning again. I probably will book a session with her at some point. To be honest with you, because even if I'm doing this for other people, you know, the mantra is, and I know some people that are in the coaching industry. The mantra is the coach needs a coach, the counselor needs a counselor. And so what a friend of mine said, if you're counseling somebody or if you're coaching somebody, then you need to be coached by someone. So I haven't gotten to that point yet, but I did do some coaching last summer, and I'm open to doing that again. And those are the kind of things that, you know, I do enjoy that. So uncommoners may become more of a freelancer, solopreneur community at some point. And I'm okay with that, but I'd like to get CopyFlat to a sustainable level before I really push into that. And because, you know, there are a number of ways to invest, and one of them is a business. So if I can have a business rolling and maybe got it going with little involvement for me, that would be ultimate. Now, it may not work that way, but that'd be awesome.
Hey, to bring us back full circle, you got to see where it evolves, and you know, whatever you've got, your eyes set on what your why is, as you mentioned before. You know, you with time and a bit of hard work, and you know, maybe a bit of luck and a fair wind, you'll get there.
Maybe so. Yeah, yeah. I look up to Kim too. I kind of refer to Kim as a mama hen for a lot of us, and she rolls her eyes at me a little bit on that, because you know, she don't consider herself a mama to all of us, but In a metaphorical way, of course. She's like a mama hen. We all looked up to her, and we learned a lot from her and her stories. And so she's a storyteller at heart as well. And, I mean, that's what she does. And that's why I'm so into storytelling for you know, content, because it's so impactful. You know, telling a story can really do a lot for you. And Kim is not afraid to tell a story about what's going on, and I admire that.
You know, I think there's an element of confidence when it comes into that as well, because for so long, content on the web was to do solely with search engine optimization and getting your content to the top, getting it found for the right keywords, getting you know, it driving traffic or improving quality scores on AdWords or whatever it might be, that the content had a sort of a metric assigned to it. And actually to move your content from that, okay, yeah, you still need a service page that says what you're about. And I'm not trying to detract any of the importance of search engine rankings or anything like that. But if you're trying to create your content as a story, you take that pressure off it, don't you? You break it down. It's no longer about, bam, this is what I'm trying to tell you as fast as I possibly can and as succinctly. It's about, come on this journey with me and go from point A to point B. And that may take us, it may take us a 3,000 word blog post, or it may take us a week worth of a course, an email course, or it might take us a month of email newsletters or whatever, but you've got to have that confidence to slow it down.
Yeah, I know more than a lot of people on SEO, but I don't consider myself an expert. But when I keep looking at everything, it still comes back to, apparently, backlinks still matter for SEO rankings. So people are focused more on organic backlinks these days rather than trying to manipulate and buy and all that kind of stuff. Yeah. So you have these articles, you know, this skyscraper type stuff that, you know, somebody like Brian Dean does. Mm. These massive articles with so much stuff, you think to yourself, man, I could turn that into a 10 blog post series, but he puts it all in one article. And, you know, and not everybody can do that. Not everybody can read that. So, but one of the genius things that Brian Clark did at CopyBlogger is he would probably take that and break it all down, and then he would build a page, one page, that would put links and summaries to each one in there, and those would become high-performing keyword pages. But in the end of the day, it's got to be engaging and relevant. And if it's engaging and relevant enough, you know, typically people will begin to link to it or share it. And that's, you know, but really you have two things you have to think about, right? You have, obviously you want to write something that gets the attention of search engines. And if it ranks high enough, you can get massive amounts of traffic. Of course, the traffic has to be relevant traffic, right? Traffic, yep. People who will actually convert, that kind of thing. But the other side is you actually have a tribe of readers. And if you focus too much on what you're trying to do with the SEO, you might completely miss your own tribe of readers. So you gotta, you know, that's important that you write to them. You know, I'm a marketing consultant, so I want to write about marketing things, you know, not necessarily the, you know, well, what would be the point of a marketing person to write about the death of Burt Reynolds?
Yeah.
I mean, that's the big thing today. Sure, I get it. Unless you can tie it into your marketing thing, which you probably can if you think hard enough. But, I mean, you know, you got to think about your own traffic as well. So when Brian Dean writes those articles, the people like him are reading it, and they go nuts on that stuff, and that's fine. Mm-hmm. They'll read a 10,000 word article, or they'll download it as a PDF and read it later, you know. And it works for his audience because that's what they want to read. But it probably won't work for your audience. They're going to be, why'd you give me a 10,000 word article? I'm not going to take time to read that. You have to balance it out, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, you make such a good point about sort of taking events that are happening now, but not trying to force them into a marketing point for yourself. But actually, if there's a synergy there, just, you know, you can turn that into some kind of useful content for yourself.
Yeah, you could take if you want to talk about storytelling, you could put Burt Reynolds into that pretty easily because he told stories as an actor, you know, and he has stories, and so yeah. He was one of the best actors of our generation, and you could do that. But, you know, it's not about doing it just to get the SEO or to get on the top page or to really piggyback something that's hot right now. You know, you got to be careful not to miss your own audience to try to do something like that.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know what? I think what's giving testament to that is I'm just thinking back over the number of people that we've name dropped between the two of us in just the recording of this podcast. So we've been going now 40 odd minutes, and I was trying to make notes of them in the software that we were using. I had to give up. I'm going to have to go back and re-listen to get a few of them in. But you know, it's just a testament to how you started by saying, you know, this world, the networks are getting smaller and people are getting to know each other and friendships are starting to blossom. But actually, the knock-on effect of the influence of the people that you surround yourself with, it just kind of cascades through entrepreneurs. And, you know, as you're a copywriter, I'm a developer, somebody else is a maintenance guy, Lee's an agency, he started as a developer, I suppose. Kim's a content writer. But you know what? We've all got these different stories and skill sets. And the more we spend time together, the more we kind of rub off on each other and help each other with expanding our own businesses.
Yeah. It's a beautiful thing.
It is. It is. That feels like we've come to a good place to pause. You know what, Todd? I was going to ask you about a bit more about the importance of copy. I was going to ask you a bit more about where you're going with CopyFlight and that kind of thing. But maybe we just need another episode in a few weeks' time to go over that.
Sounds like a plan. I'd be happy to do it.
So, Todd, just where can people find you? I know we've mentioned CopyFlight.com, but where can people find you if they want to connect?
Very, very active on Facebook. So I think my URL for my personal one is toddyjones.net because I had a domain that I use for that. And then I have a Facebook page for CopyFlight and for Toddy Jones. The vendor talked me into doing my own personal Facebook page. I'm still not sure what I'm going to do with that. And then on Twitter, T.E. Jones, I've had that for 10 years, and that probably, if you reach out to me on Twitter, I'll probably respond. And then I'm on LinkedIn as well. I think it's Todd Jones, ARK, or something like that.
Okay, cool. Well, I'll do a bit of social stalking for you and get a few links and drop them into the show notes.
Yeah, absolutely.
I don't know if I mentioned this before, but show notes for this episode will be on peteeverett.com/017. And Todd, I really, really appreciate your time. Thank you for coming on the show.
Oh, thanks for having me. I appreciate it, Pete.
No worries. We'll speak to you soon.
All right. Bye-bye.
Thanks again, Todd, for your time. That was an awesome episode. As I said, show notes can be found at peteeverett.com/017. And please, please come and join myself and Todd and the other marketing developers in the Marketing Development Podcast group at peteeverett.com/group. See you next week.